With sports car racing news from around the globe, this is the Sports Car 365 Double Stint Podcast. Here's Ryan Marine.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Double Stint, Sports Car 365's Sports Car Racing Podcast in Indianapolis. I'm Ryan Marine. We've got Jake Kilshaw joining us this week for our look back, our year-in-review episode for the 2018 Blancpain GT Series season. Plus, we'll throw in some Intercontinental GT Challenge in there as well. Jake, you looking forward to running through what was an interesting and memorable year in SRO racing in Europe and elsewhere?
Yeah, I am. It's been a really good season.
It has indeed, so plenty for us to cover here on the show this week. This will be the format. In segment one, we'll be talking about the overall Blancpain GT Series Championship, some of the highlights of the year, also some of the preseason storylines, which of them turned into things to pay attention to, others that perhaps weren't quite as important as we expected them to be. Segment two of the show, we'll talk about the Sprint and Endurance Cup specifically, and also we'll go into the Intercontinental GT Challenge as well, and we'll move on in segment three to looking ahead to the future of these champions. The umbrella continues to spread all over the world. So, Jake, let's start talking about the overall championship, some storylines in the preseason that we had laid out that we wanted to keep an eye on, included in the Endurance Cup, limiting the grid to just 26 Pro entries. We also noted that there weren't a ton of AM entries for this year, especially in the Sprint Cup. In the Endurance Cup, the Pro-AM lineups being restricted to two bronzes and only one Pro. Also, Silver Cup extended into Endurance, not just the Sprint Championship. And the Sprint Cup had a format change. I think this one was perhaps the biggest change in the offseason, with two races both on equal points instead of the qualifying races that we had seen in the past. So, of those storylines, Jake, which ones bore fruit? Which ones were actually a significant change for this season, and which ones maybe turned into non-stories as the season went along?
Yeah, as you said, Ryan, the format change for the Sprint Cup was probably the biggest change, and I think it was very successful. Two races that have always been the same length. They've both been 60 minutes historically, but they were different importance. So before this season, the qualifying race, the first race paid 8 points for a win, and the main race paid 25 points. So obviously a very, very big difference there. For this season, they were equal, both equal race one and race two, rather than a qualifying race and a main race. And this obviously brings it a lot more in line with most other GT championships, including all of the other SRO series, which had previously done this in the Blancpain GT Series Asia, for example, or some of the British GT races, or the GT4 series races as well. So it's good to see that happen. That was just generally a good all-round change. I can't imagine any major criticism of this. And the thing is, it means that you've got twice the action, really, on the weekend, because if you have it previously, if the first race of the weekend was a good race, then it doesn't really matter too much because it was only a qualifying race. But this means you've got two races which have got the potential of being very important for championship, and it doesn't really write anything off. So yeah, all good there. Elsewhere, you mentioned as well with the Endurance Cup, they made the decision to limit the grid to 26 pro entries in an attempt to get more Pro-Am and Am cars. A strange one, this, really. It makes perfect sense. It goes along with Stefan Rattel's vision of keeping gentleman drivers in the field and not letting this just get to be an all-pro championship, which the manufacturers dominate. But the way that this was limited and presented in the pre-season suggested that it was going to be a big thing, and 26 wasn't going to be very much. And then I don't think we actually got to 26 cars in the pro class. I think it was around 23 for the start of the season. So it worked well. We had more Pro-Am and Silver Cup cars. The Silver Cup was another addition for this champion for this season for the Endurance Cup. It had previously been in the Sprint Cup as well. But we brought the Silver Cup, which is effectively an all-silver driver lineup as a separate class, and then readjusted the Pro-Am regs to allow only two bronzes and one pro in Pro-Am for the Endurance Cup. I think it was still the cup was probably one of the highlights as well, one of the best changes they made. We've got some really good driver lineups there. The Barwell lineup, for example, and the ML Frey Jaguar lineup, both really, really good. And we've got some good battles throughout the season in that class as well. Probably better than Pro-Am, in my opinion. The only place that this could sort of be improved is the Am Cup, which didn't really have very many entries at any point in the season. But I think a lot of this is because, of course, if you've got an all-amateur lineup, it's kind of difficult to compete on the same grid as all-pro lineups with factory drivers who are getting better and better each year. So I think the SRO sort of acknowledges this. I think they're sort of trying to take measures to convince a lot of Am drivers who want a sort of an easier environment to look at other series. The Blancpain GT Sports Club, for example, which supports a lot of Blancpain GT series races, is a good place for AM drivers, and that's going to include two driver lineups next season rather than just one per car. And also a lot of the new GT4 series that the SRO is coming out with. So I think the fact that we didn't have many cars in the AM Cup wasn't too much of an issue. We got really good racing in all the other classes, and I think the situation with amateur drivers in the Blancpain GT series is a lot healthier this time than it might have been this time last year.
Yeah, all in all, it made for a captivating season of GT racing. There's no doubt about that. Looking at the season as a whole, I'd say, from my perspective at least, and you can tell me if you agree or not, I'd characterize the season as, one, the season of Raffaele Marchiello, who was absolutely stellar in what I have to consider as a breakout performance from him, although I think we knew his quality before, but it was really on display throughout the course of this 2018 season, but also a season of some controversial post-race penalties, which delayed knowing exactly who had won some of the races and in fact, championships, too, that it took a while to determine who exactly came out on top. I think those are the two things I'm going to remember most from 2018. What about you?
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree there. Marchiello, as you said, Ryan, had a fantastic season. It was only his second full season in GT racing. I think his sort of standout performance that sort of brought him onto the map properly was at Spa 24 last year, when he did, I think, 14 hours of the race and couldn't make it to the podium because he was so exhausted. And that really just proved to people how good he was as a GT driver. And this year just cemented that. He only got his first win of the Blancpain season in August in Hungaroring, incredibly. But all season long was just consistent. Him and his teammates did really well and a great season. A big storyline is just seeing how Marchiello's improved and how he's progressing. And I think it's difficult to pick him as anyone other than the driver of the year, which I know we'll get onto a bit later in the show. So I think a very deserving overall champion. And then the other point that you mentioned about the post-race penalties, this was a big one. I think sort of the main negative aspect of Blancpain GT series this season. Basically, the situation was that a lot of races and qualifying sessions were decided by post-race penalties and stewards' decisions. I think it did get a little bit out of hand by the end of the season. We had a situation at Silverstone where we didn't know the pole sitter until half an hour before the race, after a situation involving an SD card for the R Motorsport Aston Martin. And then WRT and Black Falcon both had issues regarding tape on the air inlets on their cars that changed the pole sitter at Spa and meant we didn't know the Endurance Cup champion until a few weeks after the race. And then, of course, there was another issue at the Nürburgring with Grasser Racing Team and Christian Engelhardt losing a race win there for a controversial situation there. And then a series of events unfolded and Christian Engelhardt is no longer with Lamborghini Squadra Corsa. And I do believe that this situation was part of the reasoning there. So, a lot of these stewards' decisions, which did alter results. I spoke to Stefan Rattel a few weeks ago at the Bahrain GT Festival about this and said, you know, is there anything that the SRO can do to minimize the impact that these have? Because obviously on paper you look at it and it's not in the SRO's hands, it's in the team's hands for for making mistakes or possibly cheating. But Rattel said that pretty much there were some times when the SRO could have done better, he admitted. For example, with the tape situation at Spa, if the SRO had put out a clearer communication, he said that the blocked Falcon wouldn't have had a similar problem a few weeks later at Barcelona. He put it down to the fact that Claude Simon, who's the technical director at the SRO, is just so overworked because they've got so many championships that either the SRO runs or that use the SRO's BOP or technical regs, and it's just getting to the point where there's so much to take care of that mistakes do slip through. And I thought it was very, very interesting that Rattel did admit this. So they're going to reinforce the technical department, he said, for next year. Not entirely sure how they're going to do that, but it's definitely something that they're working on, and they acknowledge is an issue. So it's good to see the SRO take action on this, and hopefully it'll be a bit simpler next year.
Yeah, I've heard Stefan make similar comments here over the last couple of months and some of the appearances he's made in the States. And clearly they're looking to bolster their technical department, add some staffing, and yeah, a similar comment effectively that this has gotten to the point where one man simply can't handle all of the data that's coming in. So it sounds like that is an area of focus for the SRO moving forward, and I think it's one that's going to be well received by competitors, stakeholders, and various series that run to SRO specifications around the world. So let's talk about our champion. At the end of the season, Raffaele Marchiello stood alone at the top of the standings and did so in a top 10 in points. If you scroll through it, Jake, that was absolutely dominated by German manufacturers, specifically Mercedes and Audi. You did have a couple others that were sprinkled in there, but if you're looking for a common theme that ran through the season, it was the strength of both Mercedes-AMG and their GT3 platform and what Audi has been able to do, which does not come as a surprise given their strength over the years in this championship, but definitely those two had a stranglehold, it would appear.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think something that's interesting as well is if you look at the Mercedes-AMG GT3, it's had an incredible season around the world, winning championships pretty much everywhere, race wins all year long. They've done really, really well with that car this season. But what I think is really interesting is that Mercedes is happy with it. They're not going to upgrade the car or change the car anytime soon. So many other manufacturers are either bringing out new cars or updated Evo versions of their cars for 2019. There was a new Porsche, there's Evo kits with the Audi and the Lamborghini, there's other manufacturers as well. But Mercedes is sticking with it. They know they've got a really good package with that car. Pro drivers love it. Gentlemen drivers love it. So yeah, it'll be interesting really to see how it stacks up next year compared to all of the new cars that are coming out, the Porsche, the Audi, the Lamborghini, the McLaren, everything else there. So yeah, just a really strong performance from the Mercedes in Blancpain GT Series this year, and the Audi as well. But I think also worth mentioning is there were a few other cars which were able to have considerable success at different points in the season. So for example, the McLaren and the Lexus had success at Paul Ricard. It was good to see that. The McLaren led most of that race, that six-hour race in Paul Ricard. And the Lexus really came into its own at Silverstone and then won the Ricard race in the end. But also the Jaguar as well. Emil Vray's Jaguar did really, really well in its last season of competition. Aston Martin as well historically hasn't done very well in the Blancpain GT Series, but a proper pro-class program from Motorsport this season meant that they did really well with that car and got a win at Silverstone. Again, in the last season of competition for the old V12 Aston Martin as well.
All right, that brings us to our postseason awards. We've got three of them to hand out here for the overall championship. We'll start with your moment of the year, Jake. I know there's a lot to pick from here, but if you could narrow it down to one, what stands out for good or for ill from the 2018 season?
I'd say the 24 Hours of Spa and Volkenhorst winning the race with their BMW, I think a surprise winner. That BMW M6, as well as the Rover Racing car as well, sort of came through in the last few hours of the race. But a really good performance from those guys, unexpected. They'd only been running an AM Cup entry for the rest of the season and then came to Spa with pro entry with two factory drivers in Tom Blomqvist and Philip Eng, as well as a relative unknown quantity in Christian Cronjes. And they had a really impressive race there. It was just really good to see how much this win meant to the team as well. You could just see how happy they were with it. Henry Valkenhorst was over the moon with it. And it's paid off for them as well. They've been rewarded by being able to run the BMW in the entire Intercontinental GT Challenge next year. BMW announced that recently. So, yeah, that's probably my standout moment of the year, just seeing a different team, an unexpected team, come through and win the biggest race of the Blancpain GT Series.
That's a good choice for sure. How about your race of the year in 2018?
Yeah, again, I'd probably pick Spa. It's an easy one to pick, that, really, because it's the main one and the biggest one. But it was a very exciting race and a very good 24-hour race in a season where a lot of other 24-hour races weren't particularly exciting. For me, it was the best 24-hour race of the season for sports car racing in general. Great competition, a lot of manufacturers up there until those BMWs came through. I think a close second would probably be Paul Ricard, because that produced some very interesting results, as I mentioned earlier, with the McLaren leading for, I think, 5 hours, which no one really expected. But then the last lap battle for the lead between the Lexus and the Bentley was really exciting as well. Always a great race going into the darkness there as well. So I'd say probably Spa, but Paul Ricard a close second.
All right, and finally, your driver of the year. And I sense we're going to have a theme here as we go throughout the show as far as driver of the year awards go.
Yeah, it's hard not to say Marciello, but I think a few other drivers do deserve a mention as well. I think Lucas Stoltz had a really good season, and I think no one really expected him to do as well as he did, because he was in that Black Falcon car and kind of would be overshadowed by Yelmer Berman and Maro Engel there. But for a silver-rated driver, Stoltz did absolutely incredibly. Also, the Shothorst brothers and Kelvin van der Linde did very well for Attempto Racing. Kelvin and Stein Shothorst gave Attempto its first series win in Zolder in the first weekend of the season, just a couple of weeks after the team switched to Audi machinery. So really sort of a last-minute deal there, and they came through and got the win at Zolder. So a few drivers there, I think, that sort of stood out and did better than expected. But it is difficult not to put Marciello as the driver of the year in general.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So with that, let's take our first break of the program. And when we return, we'll come back to talk about the Sprint and Endurance Cups plus Intercontinental GT Challenge next on the Double Stint Podcast.
Hello guys, I'm Alessandro Balzan and you are listening to Sportscar 365 Double Stint Podcast. Ciao!
Back on Double Stint, Jake still with me as we continue to look through the 2018 Blancpain GT Series year in review for 2018. Let's break it down now to Sprint and Endurance Cups before we jump into the Intercontinental GT Challenge briefly at the end of this segment. We'll start with the Sprint Cup. It was Raffaele Marciello and Michael Meadows who ended up as the champions of the season. Jake, your overall impressions of their championship run and anything else that stood out from the Sprint Cup portion of the schedule?
I'd say it was generally a very solid season for the Sprint Cup. Obviously, a slightly smaller grid than we kind of hoped for at the beginning of the season, and this was addressed early in the season. Rattel said that, talking about the pendulum effect with the Adac GT Masters, which went up to more than 35 cars, while the Sprint Cup was stuck at 20 or so. But nevertheless, a really high-quality grid. It might not have been the biggest grid, but it was very, very good quality and a lot of different cars that could challenge. Good competition and a really entertaining title battle at the end between the Acura ASP car of Meadows and Marciello and that WRT Audi of Christopher Mies and Alex Riberas. Resulted in a very good season finale at the Nürburgring, which had a very good last race and title decider, which saw Alex Riberas go off track and add a lot more drama to that title battle there. So I can't really knock much about the Sprint Cup at all this season. It's gone really well, and I think surpassed expectations based on the smaller grid. It definitely ended up being better than I think people expected it would be.
Yeah, I actually talked about this with John when we were talking about the FIA GT World Cup in Macau and the relatively small grid there. And I'm kind of the opinion that you don't really want a grid that much bigger than 20 cars. 25, 26, 27 probably seems like the sweet spot to me, because you start getting any more than that for these races in particular. I think that number is probably smaller for Macau. And you start to get some results that maybe don't paint the sport in the best light. So I think I'd take the quality grid at 20 over a lesser quality grid that has a higher number for me personally. What do you think?
I'd completely agree there. If we look at ADAC GT Masters, which had more than 30 cars, there were quite a lot more incidents this year than in the Sprint Cup as well. So I think you're definitely onto something there. And Rattel says the same thing. Stefan Rattel keeps saying that his target for the Sprint Cup is 24, 26 cars, something like that. That's what he thinks is a go-to, and reckons that when it was bigger last season, it was too big. There were too many cars, and for some of the tracks, for example, Brands Hatch or Zolder or Misano, really small, tight, twisty tracks, you don't want that many cars, because it gets, as you said, it gets a bit too chaotic, and you end up with more problems than you want.
Yeah, definitely. So let's jump into our awards here for the Sprint Cup portion of the schedule. We'll start with our Driver of the Year, Jake.
I'm going to give this one to a pairing of Christopher Mees and Alex Riberas. They did really well all season long. They didn't quite have the consistency that Marciello and Meadows had, but they did get more wins. Riberas did really well, considering it was his first season in this competition, in this environment. And then Christopher Mees, always on the game, always does really well. So I'm going to give that award to those guys.
Yeah, that makes sense. A good choice there. How about your race of the year from the Sprint Cup?
Probably the last race at the Nürburgring. It probably wasn't as good as the Nürburgring finale in 2017, to be honest, but still very good. I've got good memories from Zolder as well. That had some really good races on that first weekend there. As I said earlier about the interesting win from the Attempto guys, but there hasn't really been a bad race. It's difficult to choose this one, because they've all been fairly entertaining.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have, in the sign of the strength of the series this year. Let's jump to the Endurance Cup now. At the end of the season, and considerably after the end of the season, actually, this one was settled. Yelmer Berman, Mauro Engel, and Lucas Stoltz crowned champions eventually, but took a little while to get there, right?
Yeah, definitely. And this is one of the things I was touching on earlier about the post-race penalties. So, briefly, the situation was that those guys won the race at Barcelona, had a fairly dominant run, actually, helped by traffic caused by Nicky Team early on in the race. But that Black Falcon car dominated that three-hour race at Barcelona. But then a few hours afterwards, Stewart's decision came through. There was tape on the air inlet on their Mercedes. So they were disqualified. They appealed the decision. And then the result finally came through about 6 weeks after the race. They kept the win, which meant that Marciello couldn't take a triple championship, because that's the way it was looking at one point. So yeah, it's just a bit of a shame, really, to see another situation, let alone a race win, but a championship win, decided by Stewart's decision and so long after the race. But I wouldn't let that sort of change our general feeling about the season, because it was a really good season all year long. Good races. Not really anything, any bad races, nothing that didn't really meet expectations. So yeah, a good solid season for the Endurance Cup, another solid season, because it's been going really strong the last few years, and there hasn't really been any sign of this improvement slowing down.
You had to feel for Marciello to a certain degree, because for a while there, it looked like he had won all three of the championships and had a chance to add another going into the California 8 Hours at Laguna Seca in the Intercontinental GT Challenge, which ultimately didn't go his way. But to have that taken away, in a sense, after effectively thinking that he had won the Endurance Cup and therefore all three in the Blancpain GT Series, I feel kind of bad for him in that sense. It doesn't take anything away from what he accomplished, though, and certainly what was a masterful season across multiple categories.
Yeah, I see what you mean, but honestly, I think he was absolutely fine with it. The way he acted about the situation in typical Marcello fashion was fairly calm and collected about it. He said on social media as soon as the decision came out, you know, he congratulated his teammates at Black Falcon, was absolutely fine with it. But I think honestly, and I may have misunderstood the situation, but I got the impression that no one in the Mercedes camp really expected Black Falcon to lose the appeal. I think straight away they seemed fairly confident that what they had done was okay. It was definitely a grey area in the regulations regarding the tape and the air intakes. But I think from the outset, the Mercedes guys with Black Falcon and with Acura ASP kind of expected that Berman, Engel and Stoltz were going to be crowned champions and going to have that appeal go successfully.
All right. Well, with that, let's get to our awards here for the Endurance Cup. We'll start with Driver of the Year, Jake.
Again, I'm really struggling with this one. I'm going to give it to the champions, to Berman, Engel, and Stoltz. Marcello, again, had a really good season, but I think more of a surprise factor. I don't think people expected Black Falcon to do as well as they did and those drivers to do as well as they did. Obviously, they're very accomplished drivers and a very accomplished team, but Black Falcon especially has always struggled a little bit in Blancpain GT series. Their speciality has always been the Nürburgring and the Nürburgring 24. So it's good to see another team come through and sort of challenge Acura ASP as that lead Mercedes team. And Lucas Stoltz as well, done a really, really good season for him. Very deserving champions. So yeah, I'm going to pick those guys.
And lastly, your Race of the Year.
Well, I've already really said this one when we did it for the overall Race of the Year. So, yeah, it's going to be Spa or Paul Ricard. I've got really good memories from Spa. And as I said, a really good storyline with Volkenhorst getting that win. And Ricard as well. Great battle on the last lap there. But again, there wasn't a bad race. There were none of them that stood out as a disappointing one. So a difficult award to give.
Yep, that's for sure. But again, it was a remarkable season and an enjoyable one from the outside. So certainly understandable why that's a difficult one to narrow down. Let's wrap up this segment talking about Intercontinental GT Challenge. At the end of the season this year, Tristan Vautier was crowned the driver's champion. Audi once again reigning as the manufacturer's champion. They have made this their playground in the last couple of seasons. It's been remarkable what they've done, but it's a Mercedes driver that is the champion overall, and it was pretty clear that it was going to be one of two Mercedes drivers going into the California 8 hours unless something really strange happened, given Mercedes' decision to split Vautier from his erstwhile co-driver from the previous rounds of the season, Raffaele Marchiello, who also entered, as I said earlier, with a chance to win the Drivers' Championship in IGTC. So it made for a dramatic finish to the race. We saw Audi win the race, and that was enough to make sure that they won the manufacturer's title once again. But I thought it was a thrilling conclusion to what was maybe a groundbreaking season for this championship. If you look at, of course, Spa being an excellent race, Bathurst continuing to grow in its importance globally. And I think the replacement of Sepang with Suzuka also made a big impact on the championship as it continues to fully grow out and become what Stefan Rattel envisioned when he created this thing.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was the first season where the championship seemed to really find its feet and find its place. It was a third running of the series. In 2016, it was, of course, the first season. Stuff was trying to work out how it was all going to go out. 2017, I guess, sort of impacted by the cancellation of the Sepang race, rather. I think 2018 was when the IGTC series really found its place in racing and did really well. Four races, four different continents. A lot more competition, four or five manufacturers, depending on how you look at it, competing for the title. And I think it's the only way is up for the IGTC. Everyone seems really optimistic about it. Rattel especially reckons there could be as many as 8 manufacturers in IGTC next season. There's a few that are definitely looking at the program. We know that BMW's already confirmed it as of a couple of weeks ago. So it's nice to see the championship slowly improving and getting close to its goal. And I think next season, 2019, is going to be when it finally sort of settles down and is at the level that it was supposed to be at when it was launched. I'm really happy with how the championship's going, and it's good to see it progressing.
Yeah, I think the level of interest from manufacturers speaks volumes about where this is headed. They were pretty bullish about it. The manufacturer reps I talked to at Laguna last year, and that encouragement and certainly the confidence in Stefan Rattel's vision of this championship continues to grow, and I think branching out to Kyle Ami next year is a good sign of what's to come. We'll talk more about that in our Looking Ahead segment coming up next, but first, a standout moment of the year from you, Jake, from Intercontinental GT Challenge in 2018.
I'd say probably Laguna Seca. I think a really good running of that race, the second running of the California 8 Hours. Last year's race, I think you could say fairly disappointing, not the best race, not a very big grid. So it was nice to see a really good edition of that race in just its second year this October. Really competitive field, nice to see a lot of variety, a lot of different teams, a lot of American teams, a lot of European teams coming over. Great competition throughout the whole event. Can't really complain there at all. So I'd say probably just generally the progression and the improvement for the California 8 Hours would be my standout moment.
How about a race of the year? Do you look at that same event or do you look elsewhere? There are plenty of good races to choose from in 2018.
Yeah, it's either going to be the California 8 Hours or Spa. Obviously, I've said earlier about how I thought Spa was a really good race. So it's between those two. Probably pick Spa over Laguna. More competition in general, obviously a bigger field and a bigger event. But just a good all-around season. Bathurst was as great as it always is. Suzuka, maybe not the best action on track, but good to see the event go so smoothly, and a really good first time of running this Suzuka 10 Hours. And it obviously went a lot better than the Sepang race had gone in previous years. And there's a lot of potential for improving that event. I'd say just as a point for the future, I think the main thing that this championship needs now is more sort of unification with the rules, because the way the events are run is each of the event is effectively run by the local organizing body. So the Suzuka race is run by Mobility Land. The California 8 Hours is run by what was WC Vision and now SRO America. And this has resulted in different rules and different sporting regulations for different races, which obviously led to a bit of confusion. So I think probably the way forward to this series now is to have a bit more unification, same rules for all of the races regarding pit stop times, for example, driver pairings, all this kind of stuff, to get that the same for all of the races. I mean, it's a proper championship. I think that's sort of the next step for IGTC.
All right. And finally, your driver of the year in Intercontinental GT Challenge this year.
Yeah, I think probably it's Tristan Vautier and Marchiello, I'd say. Vautier obviously won the championship. The two drivers shared the car for all of the races apart from that title decider at Laguna Seca. So it's either Vautier or Vautier and Marchiello, I'd say. But a lot of other drivers have done really well. Some of the Audi drivers, Christopher Haase, for example, Marcus Winkelhock had a really strong season again. Winkelhock obviously won the championship last season, couldn't quite defend it this time round. But a lot of good driver talent as well. And that's good to see for a championship, but obviously its main focus is on the manufacturers. It's nice to see drivers who are standing out as well. It's not really all about the driver championship, it's about the manufacturers. So it's nice to see how you're getting drivers like Vautier and Winkelhock who are really standing out.
All right. Well, that's a good look back at the 2018 Intercontinental GT Challenge. Before that, the Sprint and Endurance Cups of Bangpan GT. Let's take a break, and when we return, we will talk about the future of the SRO Championships, growth continuing for the SRO in a lot of different ways. We'll talk about that next here on Double Stint.
Hi, I'm Jerome Liekemolen, and you're listening to Sports Car 365 Double Stint Podcast.
Back on Double Stint, time to take a look into the future here. Get your crystal ball out, Jake, and help me prognosticate what's to come for the SRO. I think we'll speak more generally about the SRO, but maybe break it into a couple sections here. We'll start with Blancpain GT in Europe specifically, looking ahead at 2019. What are the storylines that have your attention, and what are you expecting to see on track?
I'd say that for the European Blancpain GT series, it's probably one of the few areas of the SRO's remit that isn't really changing that much for 2019, which is good to see, because obviously, as I've said, the formula they've got there in the European side of things is going really well. I think the main thing to look at on the SRO in general is how the new Blancpain GT World Challenge pans out. I don't think we really understand yet exactly how this is going to be incorporated into some aspects of it. With the Blancpain GT World Challenge, America, Asia and Europe, we know that the American one is effectively replacing Pirelli World Challenge, renamed that and a new format there. The Asian one is in place of Blancpain GT Series Asia. Not entirely certain how it's going to fit into the European landscape yet. We know that it's replacing the Blancpain GT Series Sprint Cup, but we've also got the Blancpain GT Series Endurance Cup, which is staying the same, and then the whole Blancpain GT Series umbrella combining the two. So it'd be interesting to see how this sort of relationship works and how and what the dynamic is between the World Challenge Europe and the Endurance Cup. It's a fairly complicated situation, which no one really seems to fully understand at this point, but I'm sure it'll all become clear over the next couple of months.
All right, same question, just this time for Intercontinental GT Challenge. We've talked already about the growth of the championship moving to another continent, Kyalami coming next year in South Africa, more OEM involvement in the offing, and continued growth with two of the newer events on the calendar, Suzuka and the race in Laguna Seca.
Yeah, as I said a few minutes ago, the situation with IGTC is really going strong, and I think next season is going to be a time that it really comes into its own and finds where it's footing in the motorsport landscape. The expansion to a fifth continent with South Africa is, of course, great news. It'd be really good to see how that nine-hour race at Kyalami pans out at the revamped circuit there. I'm really excited to see how that comes together. And, of course, new manufacturers joining as well. If we could get as many as eight manufacturers, which I think could be possible, that would be absolutely fantastic. Great to see a lot of OEM commitment as well to that series. And it'll be interesting as well, the second running of Suzuka 10 hours, the third running of the California 8 hours, see how these all go together, if we continue growing. And as I said, if we can get a bit more unification on rules and get these a bit more clarified, then maybe that makes it even better as well.
And lastly, the SRO generally. We've seen growth in the Asian Championship for sure. Now, even though there has been a connection between the SRO and Pirelli World Challenge, that relationship becoming a lot more clear and certainly a lot more comprehensive. Looking ahead to next year, the complete rebranding of what has been known as Pirelli World Challenge into something completely different, SRO Motorsports America, and its subsidiary championships, folding that into the greater SRO umbrella, and just a general sense of growth across the board. What are you expecting 2019 to bring to the SRO more generally?
Yeah, I think the new naming system and the rebranding is a good way of cementing what the SRO has achieved over the last few seasons. There's a few things to look out for, especially sort of how the American series, what was Pirelli World Challenge, fits in to being more and more involved, with more and more part of the SRO's wider umbrella. How that all pans out, of course, the new race format there with the 90-minute races, we'll be interested to see how that goes. Just generally, it's good to see the SRO growing and now bringing all of its series on the three different continents together under this new World Challenge umbrella. It'll be interesting to see how the actual World Challenge with this title for manufacturers and drivers on all three continents does play out and how it goes. Also as well, the new GT2 class is going to be brought out next season with new cars in there, bringing in GT2 as well as GT3 and GT4. So we're going to find out more about that over the next few months. The debut for that class is going to be at the Spa 24 Hours in July, and then there's going to be some races from then in onwards in the Bonpound Sports Club, probably. So a lot of exciting stuff on the horizon for the SRO. Yeah, just excited to see how it all plays out and how it all comes together with the new naming system and the new rebranding for next year.
Well, should make for a fun season in 2019. Already looking forward to that kicking off next year. Jake, really appreciate you coming on and sharing your insights on what was a fascinating 2018 season for Blancpain GT and the Intercontinental GT Challenge.
Yeah, it's been a good one. Thanks.
It is our pleasure. We'll talk to you again soon. That is it for us this week. We, of course, don't have any question and answer on the show here because this is one of our year-in-review episodes, but just one more of those to come with a look back on the final year of Pirelli World Challenge, at least by that name. We'll have that for you next week, so looking forward to bringing that to you. Then back to regular programming as we get into the 2019 calendar, which means we'll be headed down to Daytona for the Roar here before too much longer. So plenty of things to be excited about there. Keep the questions coming, though, in the comment section or using the hashtag AskDoubleStint, and we'll get to those on our first regular podcast in 2019. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll talk to you next week with our Pirelli World Challenge Year in Review episode.